Right. We're holding on Nun Vav Amud Aleph, fourth line. We said in the Mishnah that there's a machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Suppose that a husband wrote out for his wife a ksuva, and in it is Iker, the basic amount, the 100 for a non-basula or 200 for a basula, plus a tosfos, plus a voluntary extra amount that he decided. Now, suppose that during the Erusin, so this took place during the Erusin, and during the Erusin, he died or he divorced her. What happens? The Tanakhama had said she's entitled to collect the full amount of Ksuba, the Iker plus the Tosfos, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had said only the Iker, the Tosfos, he had only given, only Al-Manas Lekoinsa, only on condition that he's only having in mind that he's going to actually marry her, and in the end, that didn't happen. So we started discussing yesterday who the halacha is like. We said that Rav and Rav Nosson or Rav Yonason argued about that, which one the halacha is like. And we said we couldn't really conclude yet which one said that the halacha is like and which one said not. So now further on that topic, the Gemara says, Yosef Rav Chanina Kamed Rav Yanai. Rav Chanina was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Yanai. Hagoyza Bach adds, it's not just Rav Chanina regular, it's actually Rav Chanina, the word is supposed to be Rav Chanina Kora. Rav Chanina Kora was a late Tana, or really more early Amora. He's called Kora because he was an expert in Mikra, he was an expert in Tanakh, and in fact we find in other places in Shas that he used to teach children Tanakh. So Tanakh was his specialty, and therefore he was called Kora in recognition of that. But he was also one of the Amiroyim, so he's sitting as a Talmud in front of Rabbi Yanai, Vakama Halacha could Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he was saying the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah of our Mishnah, only Iker, not Tosfos. Omalei, so Rabbi Yanai answered him, Puk Kori Kroch Lavora. Go read your psukim outside. This is an expression that we find in other places, that we find Rabbi Yanai using on the same Rav Chanina Kora. In other words, he's like playing off Rav Chanina Kora's nickname of Kora and saying you're an expert in psukim, but this kind of pasuk that you're saying, go take it outside, meaning it doesn't belong in the Beis Medrash, ain't halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Azariah, because halacha is not in fact like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, but rather like the Chachamim, that she gets everything. So the Gemara continues with other opinions on the subject. Omer of Yitzchak bar Avdimi Yishum Rabbeinu. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimi says in the name of Rabbeinu, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that the halacha is like it. Rashi says that Rabbeinu means Rav. Tosfos says in that case, we just had before the discussion between Rav and Rav Nosson, and we weren't sure which one says the halacha is like him and which one not. Now, based on this, we should have our answer. Obviously, Rav's the one who said it is. Therefore, Tosfos says that no, Rabbeinu over here means Rebbe. Tosfos points out there were actually two Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimis in Shas. One of them was a Talmud of Rebbe, and the other one indeed was, he himself, in fact, was one of Rav's Rebbeim. He taught him certain particular halachas that we find elsewhere in the Gemara. And then there was a different Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi who lived in a later generation. So this would be, according to Tosfos, the first Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi, and he was a Talmud of Rebbe, and therefore when he's saying in the name of Rabbeinu, he means in the name of Rebbe. Anyway, he says, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And furthermore, Amr Rav Nachman, Amr Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel the same thing. The halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Nachman, didei Amr, but that's Rav Nachman in the name of Shmuel saying that it is. Rav Nachman himself says, ain halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Nachman himself holds that not, the halacha is like the Chachamim. Unahardoi b'shmei Rav Nachman Amri. Then the Chachamim of Nahardoi said in the name of Rav Nachman that halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So you have various opinions on the different sides. And the Gemara finishes off, but Afa Gav, the lot of Rav Nachman. Now, even though Rav Nachman cursed and criticized anybody who paskins like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, but Omer, and he says, Kol Dayana Dedoin K'Rav Elazar ben Azariah, any Dayan who paskins like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, that the woman in this case is entitled only to the Iker and not the Tosfos, Hochi v'hochi tahavi, such and such should happen to him. So on the surface, the Gemara is not saying what Rav Nachman is saying should happen, but obviously when he originally said it, there would have been something. There is actually an interesting explanation that it means he's saying the exact same thing. He should be in the exact same circumstances, namely that he should be in Erusin to a girl and then she dies. And he has to deal with this matter of what amount of the tzuba he's paying. Anyway, so we see that Rav Nachman not only is saying the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but he's backing it up with a strong curse. Afilo hachi halacha k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the way that Rabbi Nachman quoted in the name of Shmuel and the way that Nahadori quote in the name of Rabbi Nachman. And the Gemara finishes off the halacha l'maisa k'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and the halacha in practice is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. When we say in practice, in other, so the Gemara says, the Rashi says, in other words, the Bnei HaYeshiva voted on it, and this is what they concluded, the halacha is like him. So despite the different opinions, despite Rav Yanai and Rav Nachman himself saying that it's not, nevertheless, the final decision is the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, Iker only no Tosfos. And when we say halacha l'maisa, what we mean is sometimes you have something which is, for example, halacha v'ein murim came. Sometimes we have something that's a certain, the halacha is a certain way, but we don't actually pask in that way in practice. In other words, in theory, it should be that way, but in practice, we pask in differently. Here we're saying in practice, we pask in like the Elazar ben Azariah, and we say that she's entitled only to Iker during the Erusin, not the Tosfos. And this is all anyway when the Ksuba was written during the Erusin. If the Ksuba is only written closer to the Nisuin, as it usually is, then in any case, it only takes effect as of the Nisuin. Okay. So now that we've established that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, boy Robin. So Robin has a question within Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's opinion. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying that he wrote out the extra amount, al menas l'koinsa, on having in mind that he's going to complete the marriage. Now, after Kiddushin, you have two more stages. Eventually, you have Nisuin, which is Chuppah, and then you have the actual Bia. So what happens if you only have one of those? Nichnasa l'chuppah v'loi nivala. What if she entered the Chuppah? And we've talked about several times in the Masechta what the definition of Chuppah is, that different Rishonim talk about. Is it indeed what we think of as the Chuppah? Or does it mean the Yichud room? Or does it even mean just the Badekin? Anyway, usually not long after that is going to be the Bia. But in this case, Veloy Nimala, they had not yet done Bia. And then he divorced her, or then he died. Mahu. Then what would we say according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Would we say Chibas Chupa Koina? What is it that he says that's Machna her, the Tosfos? Is it the love and the affection of that she's willing to go into the chuppah with him, and in that case, that took place. Or maybe it's only the affection that comes as a result of the first bia, and that hasn't happened yet. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof. Ketani Rabbi Yosef, Shalai Kosev La El Al Chivas Laila Harishon. Rabbi Yosef teaches a braisa that says, that phrases Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's statement as follows, that says that he only wrote it he wrote it only because of the affection of the first night. Now, what do we mean the first night? If you were to say that it means that the chiba of chuppah is what acquires her this tosfos, well, then that makes sense that we're talking about the first night. Then it makes sense. We're talking about the first night because the chuppah is a one-time thing, so therefore it's relevant to talk about the first one. Eli yamet chibas bia koina. But if you say that it's actually the bia, the affection that he has because she's going to do bia with him, therefore he's willing to give her the tosfos. Well then, balayla harish. So what bia balayla harishin ika mikanva elach lesa. So what does that take place only on the first night and never afterwards? No. So then why is he saying anything about layla harishin? So the fact that he phrases it that way seems to imply that he's talking more about chuppah, which is a one-time thing. So Gemara asks back, so what? The Elamai Chuppah. So what are you telling me after all that Rabbi Yosef is referring in his Braisa to the Chuppah? You have to ask Chuppah Balaila Isa Bimama Lesa. So what? Can the Chuppah only take place by night? It can't take place by day? Of course not. A Chuppah can take place anytime. So why should we assume that his Laila Hadishan refers to the Chuppah, which is not necessarily even something that takes place by night as well? So wouldn't that show that it refers to Bia? Okay, you'd have to then explain why it says Hadishan, but nevertheless, it seems more logical. But the Gemara asks back, Vili Taimech, so according to your Svara that you're asking that, you could ask the same thing, Bia Balaila Isa Bimama Lessa. So what, is it impossible for there to be Bia during the day? Now, it is true that it says in other places in Shas that you're not supposed to do Bia by day. And the reason is because there's light. Because in general, by day, there's light. So the Gemara in Nida, it was actually just a day or two ago in the Yaakov Shir that we give you in the afternoons. But anyway, so two things. First of all, the Gemara says it's a matter of the Ahavta L'Recha Kamecha. During the day, when there's light, if they're having relations, he may see something on his wife's body that he finds unattractive, and then after that, he's never going to see her the same way again, and it's going to create a wedge in their marriage and a lack of Avos Yisrael. Another point the Gemara says over there is Yisrael Kedoshim, and Jewish people are holy, and they don't just indulge in relations all the time, they limit themselves, and that includes to do it only by night. Nonetheless, the Gemara says there and in other places, nevertheless, Rava says there, we actually have it later in our Masechta as well, that if it's a dark house, if it's a house without windows or without any sources of light, then it is in fact mutter to do it during the day. So we see that, sometimes you could have bia during the day. So either way, whether you're saying that Laila Habishan refers to chuppah, or whether you say that it refers to, to bia, either way, the fact would be that they don't necessarily have to take place by night. So either way, whether you're trying to explain the braisa as referring to chuppah, or whether you're trying to refer it to bia, either way, there's no particular reason to say that either of them is limited to Laila. But the Gemara says no. You could answer holakasha. That's not a big deal. Or hashma kamashulon to bia balayva. The Braisa would be telling us the normal way of doing things is that the bia takes place by night. Yes, you could have a bias ofel, but that's unusual. And generally speaking, therefore, it's going to be by night. Ela chupa kasha. So therefore, you could say that after all, Laila Harishon does mean the first bia, because that typically takes place by night, with the rare exception of Bayis Ofel. But as far as chupa, maybe you could say, in fact, it would be problematic. Why are we using the word Laila Harishon for chupa when chupa could just as well take place during the day? And the answer is not necessarily, because chupa nami like kasha. There's no particular difficulty in saying that it means chupa either. Given just stam chupa the bia kaima, because after all, usually the chuppah leads to bia. Usually that's the next thing after it, especially according to the opinions that say that the chuppah is the yichud room, the bia conceivably might take place right there. So therefore you could say, Urachana Kamash Malon, the Balaila Bori. So therefore maybe the Braisa is also telling us the usual way of doing things, that should be by night as well. Which actually, Maram Shif explains, the Gemara doesn't mean that chuppah itself should typically take place by night. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of the Masechta, we said Besul and Misis LeYomarabi, and he refers to a Tosfos over there from which the implication is that Chuppah is supposed to take place during the day. In fact, nowadays we typically do Chuppahs while it's still daytime, but that's for a different reason. That's because we have the Kedushin and the Nisuin together. We have the Kedushin, the Nisuin, and the Chuppah all back to back. And we want to make sure that they don't span 2 days, where then you start getting into questions about what day the ksuba should be dated, given that the ksuba takes place only at the Nisuin, it takes effect only at the Nisuin. So therefore, we don't want to have the ksuba is dated one day, and then the chuppah takes place the next day. That brings up problems in halacha. But here we're talking according to the way they did it in the times of the Gemara, where Kiddushin and Nisuin were far apart. Nevertheless, Maram Shif says that typically the chuppah does take place by day. What we mean is, in other words, over here, we're using the word bia. When we say over here, when the Gemara is saying over here that chuppah is balayla, it's actually referring to the bia. And it's referring to that because those two things generally go together. The chuppah is meant to be, the chuppah is meant to lead to bia. So therefore, he says that would answer the question. So the question would end, so the answer would be that chibas chuppah koina. Once they've gone into the chuppah, even before bia has taken place, she's now entitled not only to the ikker, but also to the tosfos, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he said the halacha is like. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Boyer of Ashi, nichnas of a chuppah or pirsa nidra ma'u. What would happen if she entered the chuppah, but then she became a nidra? Now, various mephoshim talk about that it has to be in that order. Now, so here's one of the places where we discuss the whole issue of chuppas nidah. So here we're asking the question whether when she's already nidda. If she had been nidda beforehand, if she was already a nidda before they went into the chuppah, then Rav Ashi would have less of a question, because when they went into the chuppah, he already knew that this is not going to be a valid chuppah. So now, this gets into the question, though, b'chlal, what is the story with the chuppah's nidda? Now again, part of it depends on what we define as chuppah. If we define the chuppah as a yichud, as the yichud room, for example, then there actually can't be yichud when she's a nidda. And therefore, of course, we would have to say that a chuppah's nidda is not at all kosher because there isn't a chuppah. But even if we say that chuppah is one of the other things, the chuppah as we know it, or the badekin, or whatever, you still get into the question. The fact is, we just said that chuppah is supposed to lead to bia. Here, you're not going to have bia until after she becomes tahor. So therefore, maybe it's not koina. The Rambam, in fact, says that it's not. So according to him, even if they went into the chuppah and she was nidda, and it doesn't matter, as our Gemara is saying over here, even if it was after they entered the chuppah, as long as they didn't finish the chuppah with her being tahor, then it would not be koina. And after the chuppah, she's the same as she was before, still considered only an arusa, not an asua. On the other hand, there are a number of Rishonim, the Rosh and the Ran and others, who disagree with that and say that it is Koina. The question over here in the Gemara is just going to be as far as the Tosfos. Maybe the Tosfos doesn't take effect until you have a Chuppah that's able to lead to Bia. But maybe the Chuppah by itself, even though it is a Chuppah's Nida, is Koina. So because of that suffix, who the Halacha is like, in practice we try to avoid a Chuppah's Nida when possible. But if we can't, for whatever reason, you know, the wedding date was already set, and then unexpectedly she becomes nidda or whatever, then we go ahead with it, and we just have various things that we have to do differently in order not to infringe on the halachas of nidda, including, for example, when the chassan puts the ring on the kala's finger, he has to be very careful not to touch her. In the yichud room, they can't actually be in yichud. They have to leave the door open, or they have to have a shomer with them, or whatever. So there's a couple of different things, but in general, and in general, we try to avoid the issue in the first place because of that suffix, whether it is in fact even kind. Anyway, so Rav Ashi is asking the question that what if she entered the chuppah and then became nidda? Mahu. So then what would you say? So again, according to the Rambam, the question would be, is that chuppah b'chlal kind, given that it's not a chuppah that can lead to bia right now? According to the Rosh and so forth, the question would be, Sure, now she becomes a nesua, but would she already get the tosfos according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, or maybe that would only be by a chuppah that leads to bia? Because, so Rav Ashi says, im timtza loyma chibas chuppah koina, granted you might say that chibas chuppah is enough to acquire her the tosfos, but that would be chuppah de chazir labia. That would only be where it's suitable for bia. I will chuppah de loy chazir labia, but where it's not, which where they can't yet do bia because she's a nida, loy, maybe not. Or maybe there's no difference. And the Gemara leaves it as teku. So, besides for what we said before, according to the Maharam Shif, that the way the Gemara phrased the question about night and day implied that the halacha is that chuppah is koina, besides that, we have a general rule that goes back to the Gaonim that says that when the Gemara gives a question and then a follow-up question, which begins with im tim tzaloymar, if you're going to say one side of the question, then what would be the din, such and such? Then we say the halacha is like that in Tim Tzolaymar. So here we have that. The Gemara had asked before, the Gemara had started the discussion, is it chibas chuppah or chibas bia? Now the Gemara is saying, if you're going to say chibas chuppah kona, then what about chuppah nida? So now, having said that, it means that establishes that the halacha is that chuppah itself is kona. But now, on the other hand, because we have the suffix about chuppah nida, then therefore we say that can't be koneh, because Hamotz Mechavel, Varaya, if she wants to collect that tzuba, she would have to bring proof that the halacha is that she could at that point, and of course you can't, since the Gemara left it as taken. Okay. So that's the bottom line then. So in other words, so the bottom line is as follows. If the tzuba was written to take effect only at the Nisurin, as it usually is, then there's not really a machlokus between Rav Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim, then of course it only takes effect after Nisuin. But if it was written to take effect during the Erusin, then Rav Elazar ben Azariah is saying the Iker she gets, even if nothing ever went beyond the Erusin, Tosfos she's going to get only when we reach Nisuin. We were discussing in the Gemara now, what stage of Nisuin? So in the end, we're saying that if they reach the Chuppah, and it was a chuppah that could lead to bia, even though in the end it didn't, because he divorced her, because he died, nevertheless she can collect the tosfos. But if it was a chuppah that cannot lead to bia, namely that she was a nidah, then we're saying we're left with a teku over here, and in practice the halacha is that she cannot. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda omer rotza kosev l'vesura. Rabbi Yehuda says that if he wants, he can write out. So we said, you have to have at least the minimum ksuba of 200 for a basula or 100 for a non-basula. But Rabbi Yehuda had said that you could, if you want to make the ksuba less than that, then the husband can write out a ksuba for his wife that says that it's a ksuba of 200, let's say, and she will write in return a document that says that I've received 100 of it, even though she didn't really receive that, but then that means, in other words, that now he's only on the hook for 100. So the Gemara, so Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rotza Kosev L'Vesura for it. So the Gemara asks for Sava Rabbi Yehuda to close Ben Shover. Does Rabbi Yehuda hold that in cases like this, we write a receipt? Now you have a general machloikas elsewhere in Shas, in particular in Baba Basra. Let's say a person lent money to somebody else. Let's say Reuven lent money to Shimon, and Shimon paid back part of the debt. Now the question is, what do we do? Do we say that now Shimon has the right to tell that does Shimon now have the right to tell Reuven, I want you to tear up the original shtar and write a new shtar that had that says that I owe you only 100 or whatever it is, because otherwise if you're going to write me out a receipt, the problem is if you're going to write me out a receipt for that amount, the problem is that now I have to make sure that receipt doesn't get eaten by mice or something, and if it does, then you're going to put me on the hook for the whole 200 again, even though really I only owe you 100. So he's saying, I want you to write a new shtar. So as we're going to see in the Gemara over here, Rabbi Yossi says that Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, as we're going to say now, that yes, he has a valid claim, and we should do that. On the other hand, the other opinion, Rabbi Yossi, says that not. He says, no, because there's a disadvantage to the malve in that. It means, in other words, that in particular, it means that now the malve is going to have a shibud only as of the date of the second shtar. Like this, he had a shtar that was dated on such and such a date, and it means that now he has a shibud on Shimon, on any property that Shimon sold, that Shimon owned at the time of the loan and has sold since then. Now, if he has to write out a new shtar, then it's disadvantaging him. So Rabbi Yehuda says that, so Rabbi Yossi says rather, we can't tell him to tear up the shtar and write a new one. All we can do is make him write a receipt for the loiva. And yeah, it's going to be the loiva's responsibility to make sure that receipt doesn't get lost. So now in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is talking about writing a receipt. So that's what he's saying. The chosin writes out that 200 zuz for the ksuba, and the kala writes out a receipt saying I received 100 of it already. So, the sovereign of Yehuda, the Koisvin Shover, so that does Rabbi Yehuda in fact hold that in cases like this, we write a Shover? Vahatnan, we learn in the Mishnah in Bava Basra, Misha Pora Mikas Chayvoy, if a person paid off part of his debt, so what do we do as far as the rest of it? Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yachlif, Rabbi Yehuda says, we exchange the shtar, so we have him write out a new shtar for the remaining amount, for the balance, and he tears up the original shtar. And that way the loiva doesn't have to forever guard his receipt. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, yichtev lo shover. And Rabbi Yossi says, on the other hand, he can write him out a receipt. He can tell the loiva, tough luck, I'm not disadvantaging myself by writing a new shtar, because then I'm losing out on the shibud that I had from the original time of the loan, and now I have a shibud only as of now. Instead, I'm going to give you a receipt, and you're going to have to take care of it. So Rashi mentions this reason about that this way we don't have to disadvantage him, and he loses his shibud. Tosfos points out that the Gemara there in Baba Basra gives a different reason. Why to write a receipt? The very fact that there's a receipt, and the loiva knows that if he doesn't pay off soon, then the receipt might get lost or stolen or whatever, or eaten by mice or whatever, and then he's going to have to pay all over again. That itself will induce him to pay off the loan faster. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you don't write a shayla. Now, a bunch of Rishonim ask the question, one second, that's over there. We're saying in general you don't write a shayla. Even Rabbi Yossi agrees, or even Rabbi Yehuda agrees, rather, that there are cases when you write a shover, namely when you really don't have much of an alternative. So here, what's the problem? Rabbi Yehuda is saying you write a shover because what's the alternative? You can't write out an ksuba less than 200 in the first place. So a number of Rishonim deal with that issue. Among them, the Rashba says that, sure, but on the other hand, if the Yehuda holds that you don't write a shover in general, then he says the Chachamim should not, he's saying that the Chachamim were misakin over here, that you can do things in the first place in a way that causes a shover to be written. He says in that case, if Rabbi Yehuda really held that you don't write a shover, that when possible you don't write a shover, then they wouldn't have done it this way over here. They would have found some other alternative way to do it that doesn't involve writing a shover, if nothing else, so that another Beis Din doesn't mistakenly draw precedent from that and think that in general a shover is written. So the fact that we see that we're not Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about that, and he says by all means let her write a shover, seems to indicate that Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about that in other cases they may extend that mistakenly to other cases and write a shover in other cases. But how does that fit with what he's saying in Baba Basra that in general you don't write a shover? So the answer is Amr of Yumia, Shishashivauta Mitocha. The answer is Rabbi Yumia says we don't have a separate piece of paper over here. The shover is written into the shtar itself. In other words, the ksuba itself, when you're writing out the nusach of the ksuba, you're saying that the chosen Ploini ben Ploini is pledging 200 zuz for his kala, the ploinis bas ploinis basulta, and we continue in the shtar itself, and she, in our presence, meaning the Edim, who are signed at the bottom of the shtar, said that she already received half of it. So therefore, so now there's no shover to talk about. The whole concern about a shover is that the loiva, or whoever it is, in this case it would be the husband, has to hold on to a shover indefinitely, and it might get eaten up by mice, but here it's written into the actual ksuba itself, so therefore there's no concern about that. By the way, Tosfos points out that what could happen conceivably? She keeps the ksuba. The ksuba is supposed to be in her possession all the time. So now, what happens? She might, when she wants to collect her ksuba, and it has this clause written in it that she already received half of it, she might hide the ksuba. And she's going to bring Edim that she was a Basula. We talked about earlier in the Masechta that where the Ksuba is unavailable, that she could, let's say, for example, it was burnt or something, she could bring Edim that she was a Basula at the time she got married, or that they did the typical things for her that they do when a Basula gets married, and then she's entitled to full 200. So how does it help to write it in the Shtar over here when she could always play a trick like that and end up collecting the full amount? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. One of them, one interesting Balabatisha answer being that what if the ksuba, let's consider, the ksuba often has not just ikur in it, and maybe Tosfos, it also has in the dunya, as we talked about in the previous paragraph, it also has the written in it, the dowry that she brought into the marriage, the assets that she brought into the marriage. Now let's say, for example, yes, he paid her off part of the ksuba, but now it's more in her interest to bring out the ksuba. Fine, she won't collect as much of the ksuba because he paid part of it off already, but she'll be able to collect her nidunya. As opposed to if she were to hide the ksuba and pretend that it was burnt or what have you, sure, she may collect the whole ksuba, the whole 200, but she doesn't have any proof on her nidunya, so she ends up losing out. So that would be a case where it wouldn't be in her interest to hide the ksuba. And then Tosfos goes on with a couple of other possibilities as well. Anyway, so that's one answer. Rabbi Yumia says we're not talking about a separate shover that the husband is going to have to hold on to for years. We're talking about that the shover, that the receipt is written into the text of the ksuba itself. It says that he pledged 200, and she's saying that I received 100 of it, and therefore there's no problem of a shofar, even appointed of Yehuda. Abaya says a different answer. You could even say we're talking about there's no shofar in the shtar, because you could say there's a difference. In the case of the loiva and the malva from Baba Basra, he certainly paid him off. So you have the problem, the shofar might get lost, or might play the shtara, and then the malva is going to take out the original shtar that has the full 200 or whatever written. And he's going to end up using zimnachmina, and he's going to end up collecting with it another time. Hocha, but over here, vada yoyv, hocha vada yoyvla. But over here, did he in fact give her anything? Milsa ba'alma hida amrelay. She only said that she received a certain amount of it. He didn't act, no money actually changed hands at this point. Therefore, she only told him. It's not actually true that she received anything. So therefore, at this point, it's up to him. If he guards that shover and doesn't lose it and it doesn't get eaten by mice or whatever, then good. And if not, then it's he that lost out for himself. In other words, this is not the kind of shover that Rabbi Huda would worry about, that there are consequences if he lost it. Because in that case, you actually have more money changing hands than it's supposed to. Here, to begin with, they're making this arrangement just because he doesn't want to be on the hook for a full 200 zuz of ksuba. It's not that he actually gave her anything yet. According to the Yehuda, then in the Mishnah, if he wants to be able to not have to pay out suba full 200, then fine, it's his responsibility to guard the shover, make sure it doesn't get lost, and if it gets lost, then that's his problem. So two different explanations. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema Abaya like Omer Rav Yumia." I understand why Abaya doesn't like Rav Yumia's understanding that the shogar is written into the tzuba, because like Hatani Shevar to Mitocha. After all, the Mishnah says no such thing. So we would assume Rav Yehuda says that she writes to him that she received such and such. The Pashtus, that means you write it as a shover, as a separate shtar, as you usually do. So therefore, Abaye doesn't want to say that the Mishnah is talking about specifically where the shover is written into the ksuba. Elul of Yumi and my time like Omer Abaye, but why doesn't Yumi agree with Abaye's explanation? Isn't that a sensible explanation, after all, that there's a difference between a loiva and malva, where you end up, the loiva is paying more than he borrowed in the first place? Leaving aside issues of ribbis, there's also, practically speaking, you're putting the poor guy on the hook to pay more than what he did originally, but whereas over here, you don't really have that, because no money changed hands yet anyway. So what is Rabbi Yemiya see wrong with that svar? And the answer is, he says, Gzeira shover to hachal to shover to alma. Sure, in this case, there's a specific reason to say that the shover is different. But if you say that a regular shover, should be written in our case, then it might be confused with a regular shover. A later based in might mistakenly use this as precedent to say that in a regular case of a loiva and a malva, a shover should be written, and they're not going to realize that distinction between the ksuba, where no money actually changed hands yet, versus a loan where money did change hands. So therefore, Rabbi Yemiya says that we can't say that we should be able to write a shover. The only way would be if the shover is in the ksuba itself, as Rabbi Yemiya said. Okay. So the Gemara points out. Now let's talk about another angle of this. Taima de kosvale. Now, why is Rabbi Yehuda saying that the husband is off the hook for paying the full ksuba? Only because she wrote out a document that says that she received part of it. According to Rabbi Yemiya, we're talking about it's written in the ksuba, and according to Abaye, it's talking about it's a separate document which the husband is holding on to. Aval al peh loy, but the implication is that if she were just to tell him verbally that which then it's not a shtar, then it's just a tnai, then it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying that such a thing would not be a valid tnai. Now the question is, am I? Why not? Dovash of a moment, isn't this a tnai in a matter of moment? Now it is true that it's called masna al masha kosev batorah, that he's making a tnai against something that it says in the Torah. Because the Torah, after all, says that there needs to be a ksuba, and they're trying to override it by doing less. We talked about in the first parak, and we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, the different opinions, whether ksuba is daraisa or darabanan. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the ksuba and the actual amount of it is daraisa. We learned back in the first parak that we learned it from psukim in connection with the onus and the fata. Actually, in the third parak, we learned about that, that we learned it from psukim relating to the onus and the fata, which are written in the Torah. And And we learned from that the amount for Besula is supposed to be 200 zuz. So fine, it's true, of course, that the ksuba of an almana would not be minatoria, even according to that, but it means, in other words, the basic concept of ksuba and the basic fact that that a Besula gets at least a certain amount, that would be minatoria. So anyway, so you have here, if they're going to say that she should receive less, that would be making a tnai against what the Torah is saying, which usually we would say such a tnai is invalid, but we find that Rabbi Yehuda says that when it comes to a matter involving mammon, then a tnai against what it says in the Torah is valid. The Tanya, as we learn in a braisa, if a man says to a woman, you are mekudesh to me, almanas, on condition that you have no claim against me for sher ksus va'oina, so we learned previously, and af mem zayin mem ches, the different opinions of what she'er and oina are. Everybody agrees that psus means that he has to provide her with clothing. We said she'er and oina, one of them means that he has to provide her with food. The other is that he has to have relations with her. He has to be intimate with her at least on a certain regular basis. So we discussed which one is which. But anyway, all three of those are obligations of a husband to his wife, Minatora. So now he's being Makadisher, saying on condition that you won't have any claim for any of those things against me. So Harezim Kodesh is a Tnoi Bottle Divrei Meir. So the Meir says the Kiddushin take effect, but the Tnai is Bottle. Because the Meir says you can't make a Tnai against something that it says in the Torah. Therefore, we ignore the Tnai, and we're talking about, and there is Kiddushin. Tosfos here discusses that at some length because, first of all, Tosfos says a tnai, the halacha is a tnai has to be repeated in order to be a valid tnai. You have to say something like, if such and such is done, then this action will be in effect, and if it's not done, then it won't be in effect. So that means he's actually explicitly saying over here, if you're willing to accept that there's no sher ksus va'ona, then these kiddushin are valid. If you're not willing to accept it, then these kiddushin won't be valid. Well, if she can't accept it, according to the mayor, because that would be going against the Torah, then how could the kiddushin be valid anyway? So Tosfos gives the answer that like this. Where's the whole concept that a tnai can override a maisa anyway? That you can have a maisa with a tnai attached to it, and if the tnai doesn't take place, the maisa doesn't take effect. We learn from the story of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven in Parshas Matas, where they want land in Eber HaYarden. Moshe makes a deal with them. If they go help conquer Eretz Yisrael, they'll get this land, and if not, they agree, and sure enough, they helped conquer Eretz Yisrael, and they got that land. So from there, we learn the concept of tnai and the rules for how a tnai works. So therefore, Tosfos says, really, if it weren't for that, we wouldn't think that a tnai would have the ability to override a maisa anyway. So therefore, in this case, since the Torah itself is telling you that the tnai is no good, then it means it doesn't over. Then we go back to the default. We say that there's nothing to override the maisa. Achronim discussed this. Achronim of the last generation discussed this and say, after all, I mean, still, how does that? What's the logic? I mean, you need a pasuk to tell you the concept of a tnai. It's plain common sense that there could be a tnai that a maisa is contingent on. So different Achronim. Rav Shlomo Zalman talks about this. Rav Moshe talks about this. One of the explanations that they give is basically that since the tnai and the maisa are not taking place at the same time, then therefore, if we didn't have a pasuk to tell us that that works, we would say that maybe only a tnai that takes place at the time of the maisa. You'd say that logic dictates that the tnai can prevent the maisa from taking place, but not over here where they're at different times, and therefore we can say, according to the mayor, that since the Torah is blocking this tnai from taking effect, therefore the maisa doesn't take effect. So the mayor says that it's not valid at all. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a bedavish of a mammon, tnai kaim. Rabbi Yehuda says if the tnai was on a bedavish of a mammon, then it works. So if he were to tell her that I'm being makadish you on condition that I don't have to supply clothes for you or money for clothes, then that's valid. That's a bedavish of a mammon. So she can be most on that. When it comes to oino, which is not a matter of mammon, then he has no ability to override that. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda allows a tnai, even when it's over on something in the Torah, as long as it's in something of mammon. So why in our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda saying that she has to write that she received this amount rather than just making a verbal tnai, and that should be good enough according to Rabbi Yehuda because it's a matter of mammon? The answer is Kasavah Rabbi Yehuda, Ksuba Derabbanan. So the answer is Rabbi Yehuda holds the whole concept of Ksuba is only Derabbanan. And V'chachamim also Chizuk L'divrayim Yoyse Mishal Torah. We find here and in some other places that the Chachamim reinforced their takana even more than the one in the Torah. Because after all, something in the Torah, everybody knows they have to keep it. Things that are bonan, people may get careless with. So sometimes we find where the Chachamim found it necessary to fortify and to buttress their takana even more than the parallel din in the Torah. Therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, even though when it comes to things that are written in the Torah, such as money for food and clothing, then they can make a t'nai to override that. But something like this, even though it's also involving money, since it's d'rabbanan, then the Chachamim are not going to allow them to override it with a verbal t'nai, only with a written document. So the Gemara asks, why? How do they pay us d'rabbanan? After all, the whole concept that the husband can have pay us from his wife's nechassim is also only d'rabbanan. V'loy avdu lahu rabbanan chizuk. Yet we don't find that the Chachamim reinforced their takana. They said it's possible to override, according to Rabbi Yehuda himself. The Chachamim said that it's possible to override it just with a t'nai. The t'nan, we learn later on in our Masechta. So, now you have a case. Suppose the husband writes out a shtar to his wife that says that I have nothing to do with your nechassim and the payrus from those nechassim. So now the Chachamim made a takana that he's entitled to the payrus of those nechassim, but he's waiving his rights to them. Still, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, La'olam hu oichal peyre peyres. Even then, what would happen? She would have to sell the peyres, use them to buy other karka, and that karka would become nichsa malug, and the husband again would eat the peyres of that karka, because he didn't forfeit his rights to that, he only forfeited his rights to these peyres themselves. So always, he's going to have peyre peyres, so have peyres of peyres. Ad shi yichtiva, the only way out of it is if he writes out a document, Dinudvorim, Eli bin Chasayich, I have no Dinudvorim, I have no financial stake, bin Chasayich, in your Nechasim, over Peresayan, and in their Peres, over Peres Peresayan, or even the Peres of their Peres, meaning again the Peres of the original land are sold and used to buy other land, and there are Peres from those, ad Olam, forever. So Rabbi Yehuda said, now on the face of it, Rabbi Yehuda is just saying that you write that. So that's not a proof, but the Kaimalon, my coast of Omer. We learn later in the Masechta, when we discuss this point, that when Rabbi Yehuda says you write it, doesn't specifically mean you have to write it. It's good enough, even if he just says it verbally. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda allows that a t'nai can be made to override a takana of the Chachamim, the takana that he gets payrus. So why over here, by Ksuba, would Rabbi Yehuda be saying that not? And the answer is, Amar Abaye, l'kol yesh Ksuba, v'lo l'kol yesh payrus. The answer is, every woman who gets married has a Ksuba. Every husband, then, who gets married writes his wife a ksuba. V'loyla kol yesh peiris. There isn't always peiris. Not always does she bring nichsa malug into the marriage such that there should be peiris in the first place. Therefore, Abaye says, milsa d'shchicha, something that's common, of the barabon and chizuk. And the Chachamim found it necessary to reinforce it. The ksuba, which is a common thing, you don't want people getting careless with it and thinking that you can just make a verbal t'nai and override it. So therefore, the Chachamim blocked you from doing that. Milsa deloy shchicha, as opposed to peiros, are not that common anyway. Loy of yubar rabban and chizuk. So the Chacham didn't need to reinforce it. If it happens once in a while, you have a couple that has peiros, and he's willing to forfeit his rights to the peiros, then fine, Rabbi Yehuda is going to allow it, and it's not considered mas now mashe pasuk b'Torah. The Chachamim don't find it necessary to reinforce that takana anyhow, since it's less common for people to have it in the first place. Okay. The Gemara asks, v'harei chamorim, what about the case involving donkey drivers who bring tvua to a city? Donkey drivers, like you have people who live in cities, they were like us in cities nowadays. They don't have a way to grow their own food, at least not very much of it. So for the most part, they're dependent on people bringing them food from the outside. We depend on truckers. In those days, the equivalent of truckers was hamarim, was donkey drivers who would go from one city to another selling grain and things like that. So that kind of thing is shchichi. That kind of thing is very common, because of course these donkey drivers are always going around from city to city, and you have issues of dmai involved, and v'loy avdu lo rabbanan chizuk. And yet, we don't find that the Chachamim had to reinforce their takana. So what are we talking about? Ditznan. We learn in a Mishnah in dmai. Hachamorim shenichnasu le'ir. If donkey drivers carrying grain, let's say, come into a city, but now we have the problem of dmai.
we have the problem. These donkey drivers themselves are Ame Aretz. We don't know whether we don't know whether they or whoever they bought the grain from took Meiser properly. So the Omer Echad Mehan, if one of them says Shali Chodesh Shachaveri Yoshan, my produce is new and my friend's is old, where old grain is better than new grain. New grain is not completely dried out, so you can't really grind it so effectively yet. Old grain is drier, and therefore you can grind it and get flour out of it more effectively. So one of them is saying that my colleague's grain is better than mine, or he says shali ein masukan b'chaveri b'shachaveri masukan, or he says my grain has not yet been corrected, it still has not yet had mice was taken out of it, and my friend's has had proper mice taken out of it. Ein nemonim. So the Tanakhama says we don't believe them because we have to be concerned about the problem of goyim. The problem of goyim is that what if they made a deal between them? We both want to sell our grain and go back home after all. We want people to buy it. If we don't say anything, people are going to suspect that it wasn't Meiser, and they're not going to want to buy it because they don't want to have to, in effect, then they're paying extra. When you think about it, they're paying about 10% extra because of the Meiser that they're going to have to take out and give. Well, okay, maybe not really, because they're allowed to eat the mice admission, but whatever. The point is that people may not want to bother. So therefore, maybe these people arranged between them a thing of goyim. They made a deal. In this city, I'll say that your grain is better. And in the next city, you'll return me the favor, and you'll say that my grain is better. So the Chachamim are concerned about that. And therefore, we say we can't trust them. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Nemonim. And Rabbi Yehuda says we can trust them. He's not worried about goyim. So therefore, so we see that Rabbi Yehuda says that it's very easy to override the takana of the Chachamim, even though the Chachamim are concerned about Dmai, and they made all the rules about that. Nevertheless, it's easy enough to override it by having two donkey drivers who themselves are Amei Aretz say that the other guy's food is mice. So usually we would not accept that, but here we are accepting that. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda does not say that the Chachamim reinforce their takana so much. Before we get to the answer, by the way, Rashi brings that maybe when we say over here Shalich Chodesh Shachaveri Yoshan, so on the face of it, we're talking about, as Rashi had said, we're talking about the quality of the grain. Old grain is better than new grain. Then Rashi brings an explanation that some people wanted to say we're talking about Chodesh Yoshan as far as the halachas of the oyin. But Rashi says that no, because first of all, the Gemara is going to answer that there are kulas by Dmai. This is not Dmai. This is Chodesh we're talking about. And also, we never find anywhere in Shas that Amei Aretz are not trustworthy when it comes to Chodesh. When it comes to Truma and Meiser, yes. Or not Truma, even. When it comes to Meiser and Truma's Meiser and whatever, yes. We say that we can't trust them on it, even though it's true, as the Gemara is going to say, that most Amei Aretz do take Meiser properly. There is a significant minority that don't, but Rashi points out we never find that they're not trustworthy when it comes to Chodesh. So therefore, Chodesh and Yoshan over here has to be, as we're saying, just as far as the quality of it. Now, of course, that doesn't have implications as far as Halacha, but we're just mentioning it together with Dmai. In other words, the point is, the same way as that even though we see that he's praising the other guy's grain in something that's not even relevant lahalacha, just this matter of chodesh and yashan, of whether it's old or new. Nevertheless, we say that once he's doing that, maybe also we can trust him on the meiser status of it. No, we don't say that. According to the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we do. Anyway, again, the point is that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we're saying that a takana of the Chachamim is very easily overridden. The Gemara says, "I want to buy Badavidivrem of the Rabbanon Chizuk." Only when you have something where it's certain, then the Chachamim reinforce that the Ksuba is a certain thing. He has an obligation for it. Therefore, the Chachamim are reinforcing it and saying that a verbal tonight to override it is not good enough. Suffik the Divrem of the Rabbanon Chizuk. But when it comes to something like this, Dmai is only a suffik. Therefore, the Chachamim didn't find it necessary to reinforce it. Rava Amar B'Dmai Hikivu. Rava says, "Never mind that." A regular suffix derabanan, maybe sometimes we would reinforce, but demai is even more lenient than a regular suffix derabanan, because after all, most Amei Aretz do take proper meiser. It's only a minority that doesn't. It's a significant minority, but nonetheless a minority. So therefore, that's good enough to say that Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about going in that case. But usually he would say says Rava, that not only in a case of Vaday, but even in a case of Suffolk, that yes, the Chachamim would reinforce their Takaris. Okay, so the bottom line is, again, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's one thing to write out that she received part of the Ksuba, and that's valid, but to actually make a T'nai to that effect of verbal T'nai, Rabbi Yehuda is saying would not work, because again, we said he holds the Ksuba as the Rabbanon, and the Chachamim reinforced their Takaris with that. We said in the Mishnah, Rav Meir Omer Kol HaPoichas V'Chula, we said Rav Meir says if you go below 200 for a B'sula or 100 for an Amana, then it's Be'ilas Znus. Tosfos, by the way, a few blocks earlier discusses the question, is that always the case? What about, if there were to be a case where T'nai was made and would in fact be valid, then she knows for sure. In other words, the first Tosfos brings from the Rivan, that maybe the problem is only when she can't be sure. Am I in fact going to get 200, or maybe is the T'nai going to be valid and I get only 100? But if she were to know for sure, for whatever reason, that she's getting only 100, maybe even Reb Meir would be fine with it. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss there, not necessarily. Reb Meir is saying an absolute statement that has to be 200 or 100. So the Gemara says, Kol HaPoichas HaFilu B'Tanah. So we're saying, even if they made a T'nai. Now, the point is, Rashi says, Reb Meir could have phrased it differently. He could have just said, a Basola who doesn't have a Ksuba of 200, or an Amono who doesn't have a Ksuba of 100, is Be'ilas Nus. He doesn't say that. So he's saying that even though in the end she does get the 200, since to begin with he made such a T'nai, and again, like Tosfos brought from the Rivan, she therefore is not sure whether that T'nai might be in effect. Nevertheless, he's saying that there's no smichus das, therefore he's saying that it's no good. So Alma Kasava T'nai Batal. So it means Reb Meir is saying that if T'nai is Batal, T'nai does not take effect, the Isla, and therefore that she has the right to the full 200. The Kivan, but the problem is, the Kivan to Amala, less Lach El Amana, but he had said that you have only a mana, therefore there's some Chadaita, therefore she has no Smichos Das, she has no mental certainty that she is going to get 200, because she doesn't know, is it T'nai going to be in effect or not. So the mayor is saying the T'nai is Batu, but she may not know that. And therefore, you could say that the Havile Be'ilas and Be'ilas Nus, and then it amounts to the Be'ilas Nus, because she can't be certain that it's a valid Be'ilah. The problem with that is, V'hashamin and Leila Meir, Dorma Kala Masna Masha Kazva Tera T'nai Batal. Don't we anyway find Reb Meir saying that the T'nai, that a T'nai against something of the Torah, we just said on Amud Aleph, that he says that the T'nai is Batal, so there's no Chiddush in it. Of course the T'nai is Batal, and we don't even have to talk about whether the Smichus Das or not. So the answer is Ksuba Rameir, Ksuba Daraisa. The answer is Rameir holds that Ksuba is Daraisa, and therefore we have to. It's not just enough to say that the T'nai is Batal. We actually have to talk about there is the problem that even though the T'nai is in fact Batal, she doesn't know that, and therefore it's Be'ilas Nus. Okay. So continuing on this topic, the Gemara says Tanya Rameir Omer. If he reduces the amount for b'sula less than 200 or for b'ula less than 100, then it's b'ilas nus, it's no good. Rav Yossi says it's allowed, meaning Rav Yossi differs with what we said before, that you can't make such a condition bal peh. Rav Yossi would allow you even to make a condition bal peh. Rav Yehuda, we said before, says that no, because he says the Chachamim reinforce their Takana and don't allow that. Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold that concept. So he says that they could even make a T'nai al peh against that. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do al peh, but you can do in writing. Like he said in the Mishnah, if he wants, he can write out a shtar of 200 for we can write out a shtar for 200, because Sevislay Skabaltimum Kamana, and she'll write back saying that I receive 100 of it. Or she writes out a ksuba for an amana of 100, because Sevislay Skabaltimum Fachamishim Zuz, and she writes that I received 50. So we have three different opinions over here. We have the mayor who doesn't allow any playing around with that at all. It has to be 100 or 200. According to the Yehuda, you can play around with it, but only through a shtar, not through a verbal t'nai. And according to the Yossi, you can even make it through a verbal t'nai. So the Gemara says, "Sover the Yossi Rashoi." So you're telling me the Yossi says such a thing is allowed? But Urimini, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, "Ein oisik ksubas isha metalpin." You can't make the ksuba be dependent on metaltlin, namely that the husband is going to designate certain metaltlin that are going to be used to pay the ksuba. It has to be that there's a shibud on his karka and on all his property, mipnei tikkun ha'olam, in order to fix up things in the world, because what happens if those metaltlin get lost or depreciate or whatever? But Rabbi Yossi says, "V'chima tikkun ha'olam yesh b'zu." What kind of tikkun ha'olam are you talking about? V'aloi in ksuvin u'poichsin. After all, they're not fixed in value, and they can depreciate. So the Gemara asks, "Tanakama nami einosim kama." So what is Rabbi Yossi adding to the Tanakama? The Tanakama is saying that you can't do it. Rabbi Yossi is also saying you can't do it because they'll depreciate. What's the difference? Obviously, what we mean is, the Braise is saying, the Tanakama is saying, when would we say you can't use metaltlin as pre-designated as that through them the tsuba is going to be paid off? B'shaloi kibbal ol b'achrayus. Only if the husband did not accept the achrayus on the rest of his property. So he said that you can collect from this, and then if those things are lost, then she has no recourse. But if he did accept the achrayus, so then you have those metaltlin are supposed to be available to pay off her ksuba. If those metaltlin are lost or depreciated or whatever, then she still has a backup shibud on the rest of his property. So then oisin, so then the Tanakama will be fine with that. But osir of Yosef Lemaimer, and Rav Yosi says, even ki kibbal ol achrayus. So what, he took achrayus? Am I oisin? Still, why should he be able to make a ksuba dependent on metaltlin? After all, the value of them is not fixed in the first place, or person, and they can depreciate. So therefore, even that you can't do. Tosfos points out, if the husband were to take achrayus for that itself, that he would take achrayus that if the metaltlin depreciate or get lost, then he'll make good on that, then that's different. Rav Yossi might allow that, but we're talking about otherwise. So the Gemara says, so let's consider. Hashta, so now let's consider a Kal V'chomer. Uma hosim the Dilma Pachsi. In that case, it's only it might depreciate. Chayish Rav Yossi, and still Rav Yossi is concerned about that and says you can't do that. Hocha the Vade Kapasa. Here you're telling me for sure it's depreciated because the Ksuba is supposed to be 200, and Rav Yossi is saying that they can make a verbal T'nai that's really only going to be 100. Loikot, again, how much more so? Why is Rav Yossi allowing it? And the answer is, and the Gemara answer is, they're back. Bachi Hashta. What kind of a comparison is that? Hosim la yoda. There she doesn't know that the metaltlin are going to depreciate, or that they're worth less than she thought. Detachil, that she should be able to be moichel on that. Hocha yoda. Become machla. Over here, she knows to begin with that it's going to be only 100. So therefore, we can say she's moichel, and therefore Rav Yossi would be fine with that. Only in a case where she has no way of knowing for sure how much these metaltlin are eventually going to be worth, and whether there is the possibility of depreciation. Then Rav Yossi wouldn't allow it, because we have to have a full das that she knows that she can collect the full amount she knows to begin with is going to be huksuba. So if she knows to begin with huksuba is going to be only 100, then fine, then she was moichel on that, but not in the case of the talpin where she can never be sure. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, discussing this point, who the halacha is like in this three-way machlokas.